morning, which is United States versus Jose Bedoya Zavala, case number 093690. Good morning, Mr. Steinle.
Good morning. May it please the court and Ms. Blackwood, the issue in this case obviously is very limited. I don't know that I'll use all my time, but it's the sole issue. In this case is Jose Bedoya Zavala, who was indicted for possession with the intent to deliver 2 kilos. Ms. Blackwood and I resolved the case. The only issue essentially was quantity, and we resolved that, and the court ruled in our favor on that by basically stipulation of the parties. The other one was a 2-point enhancement for the giving of the false name. When Jose Bedoya Zavala was arrested, he said that his name was Herrero. But I think that this case is, you have to look at the specific facts of it, because all the cases in the Seventh Circuit that have been cited both by both the briefs are very, very specific that the lies were done to the pre-sentence writer for the pre-sentence report, or were done to a magistrate judge at the initial appearance, and I don't think that that was done in this case. When I say that is that the defendant was arrested on February 7th. He was kept in jail for 2 days, and cocaine was not found on him. Essentially what it is it was because another individual who had been arrested with the cocaine said he got it from Jose Bedoya Zavala. And Jose Bedoya Zavala therefore was arrested for this, put in jail. He doesn't speak a lot of English. When I say that, it was very broken at the time. He stays in jail for 2 days, and in the meantime, he had already been printed, and he comes back to the district court for his initial appearance 2 days later on the 9th. 2 days later on the 9th, and how it works in our federal courthouses is they're put into the basement, and then a duty probation officer goes down and gets some basic background information, because the name is Arroyo on the card, basically, at the U.S. Marshals Service. They proceed to talk to the probation officer, not with an interpreter, but talk to that probation officer. By the time he gets upstairs at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to the magistrate judge, the government, the agents, and the court all knew that his real name was Jose Bedoya Zavala. Why? Because his fingerprints had already been run. And the criminal complaint that was issued and signed by the magistrate judge that morning all had Jose Bedoya Zavala on the criminal complaint. So hours before he even made his initial appearance, everybody on the case knew, except for the defendant himself, that they knew what his real name was in this case. And I think that that honestly goes to a lot of the weight of what I'm saying is because what I argue here is the defendant's conduct did not significantly hinder the prosecution in this case, and it's a point that was conceded by the government in this case at the sentencing itself. And the reason why I think the government conceded that is because they said no matter what was happening on the 9th when he came up into the and before the magistrate judge, we were asking for detention either way. The guy could have said his name was Michael Smith, and it didn't matter. We were going to ask for the detention. And I think that in the if you look at the transcript itself, Ms. Blackwood even argued to Judge Randa at that point that the government was not inconvenienced in any way with regard to this, because we all knew who he was in the beginning. So the whole argument basically is we're looking at 3C1.1, but it's notes 4 and 5. And under note 4, it says that you have to make a false statement to the pre-sentence investigator, and then they tag in and the guidelines tag in, or other investigation. So I assume that basically a bail argument would be another investigation. But then you look at 3C1.1 note 5 and 5H specifically, it says that if you lie to the police officer about your name itself, that doesn't count. So at what point do we then cut this off? When I say that is yes, he did. And under note 5H, he did give a wrong name to the police officers. And clearly under 5H, he wouldn't be tagged with that 2-point enhancement, in my opinion. The question is at what point do we then cut that off, because He doesn't understand English. He doesn't understand the function of the pre-sentence writer who talks to him in the basement of the courthouse that goes up. And everybody in the courthouse knows he's Jose Bedoya Zavala, but he then interviews and gives some background with regard to it.
Yeah, he doesn't just give a false name. He gives a false date of birth. He gives false names of his parents and a false deportation history.
I concede that. And what I'm saying is, but at the same time, there's not an interpreter there, so he doesn't know the function of what this pretrial services worker is doing down in there. As far as he's concerned, it's still the police officers in this case. He doesn't know that, and an interpreter isn't furnished at that point.
Well, and the district court was entitled to infer that he did, though.
I understand
that's a fact-finding that we would defer to.
And that's where I say under the standard it's clearly erroneous because you're assuming facts, I guess not in evidence. When I say that is we didn't take any testimony with regard to it, but it was argued that, in fact, he did not have an interpreter at that time. But my point in this, in my argument is that whether you look at the Thomas case, the Gaddy case, the Garcia case, Harrison, Ojo, all those cases have to do with actually lying either to a district court, that is going forward with the lie to the district court or lying to the probation officer itself. I think that this case is more like the more recent cases, United States versus Elliott, and in United States versus Elliott, this court decided that, in fact, that the defendant was sentenced and then didn't report, and when he was arrested, he had given a false name to the agents in that case. And this court said in the Elliott case, it didn't matter what the guy said. The agents all knew who he was, so he could have sat there and said anything whatsoever, and it would not have affected it. And I think the actual language by Judge Easterbrook said that his lies had no more effect than if he started yodeling, hoping that the agents would leave to avoid the assault on their aesthetic sensibilities. It's the same thing in this case. Is the exact same thing is he insisted to the police officers his name was Arreo, but his real name was Jose Bedoya Zavala, and he was kidding nobody, and every single person knew it.
But the police officer to whom he initially gave the alias didn't know it, and neither did the probation agent, right?
But and it's unclear.
The prosecutor knew eventually,
The question is did they know it at the time that he was brought into the building on February 9th? And I submit that they did know it at that point because they got a criminal complaint signed by a magistrate judge with Jose Bedoya Zavala on it.
But at the time the lie was told, the recipient of that lie didn't know that it was an alias.
But pursuant
on all fours with Elliott.
But pursuant to 3C1 .1 paren 5H in the Elliott case, it doesn't matter if you lie to the police officers. I mean, those cases are clear that a lie like that doesn't enhance you. The question here is did he lie to, in my opinion, knowingly lie to the probation officer? And in my opinion, that lie that he said 2 days earlier was being continued to a person that he thought was law enforcement downstairs. So he continued to do it, but when he got up to court, he never tried to, once they said you're Jose Bedoya Zavala, he never tried to duck it. As a matter of fact, he accepted the responsibility. He got detained with regard to it, and he didn't challenge the detention hearing later on with regard to it. So in short, what I'm asking the court is to look at, this is a fact-specific case, and I understand I'm asking you to draw the line, again, closer to the defendant in this side, only because I truly believe he did not know when he talked to that probation officer that he was not talking to anybody other than law enforcement. So I'm asking the court to rule that as long as a false name doesn't get repeated to the court or the magistrate itself, that it's more like 3C1.1, Note 5 in Elliott than otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Blackwood.
May it please the court, counsel. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. I don't know what deceiver Sir Walter Scott was talking about when he wrote those words some 200 years ago, but certainly it applies to the defendant in this case. The defendant, in essence, is suggesting that because he had been living and working under a false name since he illegally reentered the United States after deportation, the perpetuation of that lie is somehow not willful. In other words, because he had been practicing and living the lie for years, undoubtedly to avoid detection by immigration officials, that he should not be held responsible for perpetuating that lie to the United States probation officer who was writing a report for the benefit of the court at his bond hearing. He lied about his identity, and he lied about his immigration status. Two points of information that would have been critical to a determination. So the defendant's suggestion that those lies were not willful because he'd been telling them for years is without merit. The integrity of the judicial process depends upon the provision of accurate information to the court. When a magistrate judge is deciding whether or not a defendant should be released on bond or detained, who the defendant is and the circumstances of his presence in the United States is paramount. And it's especially important in a case such as this where there is a presumption of detention. The fact that the magistrate judge in the end may not have been misled is not controlling, and that is clear from all of the cases. The cases tell us that whether or not the court actually relied on the falsehood is not relevant to the application of the obstruction enhancement when we're talking about lying to the court as opposed to lying to the police. The application note 6 defines materiality, as information that, if believed, would tend to influence the issue under determination. The issue under determination here was bond versus detention, whether or not the defendant was going to walk out the door that day or whether or not he was going to be detained.
The government was sort of, I guess, sympathetic too, right, at first?
Yes, and I think the government, to some extent, missed the point in suggesting that because the police were not inconvenienced or ultimately misled, we told the court that he was going to be arrested no matter who he said he was. He was going to be found out because he was going to be fingerprinted no matter who he said he was. That's standard operating procedure. So the police, in the end, were able to come to me and tell me he's not really Arroyo. He is Bedolla Zavala, and that's what the criminal complaint was issued at. But that morning, when the defendant's downstairs talking to a person who does not look like a police officer, this is a person wearing plain clothes coming into the jail cell and asking for personal information, and I'm sure is explaining the purpose of the interview to the defendant at that time. There is no evidence that he thought he was talking to the police and that he thought he was just continuing the lie to the police. I imagine it was quite clear to him that this was for the purpose of a bond study to advise the court about information. He made up a name, he made up a date of birth, he made up parent information, and he said that he'd been present legally in the United States since 1991. All of those are facts that, if believed, would tend to influence a bond determination. And for that reason, it's the government's position that the district court was correct when it applied the enhancement and that that judgment should be affirmed.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Just finally.
Very, very briefly. Government just argued that there was no evidence that he was not talking to the police or that he was talking to the police as opposed to a probation officer. But there's no evidence the opposite is true. And I think Ms. Blackwood tried to say that because they're in plain clothes, they have to be probation officers. And that's not true, because most of the agents who work undercover drug cases are in plain clothes. So I think to sit there and assume that we all knew he was talking to a probation officer, the record is silent on that. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. Mr. Steinle, were you appointed by the court on this case?
I was not.
Okay. All right. Well, you still have the thanks of the court. Both counsel have the thanks of the court. The case is taken under advisement.